Let's see now. Your name is Wendell List, right?
Turnbull Holder.
Wendell O. List, and this is July the 16th. Why don't we just start to tell me how you happened to come to Bristow?
Well, my dad and I bought Ford Agency here in 1923, and we took possession of it 1st of October 1923.
Where'd you come from?
We came from Tulsa.
Okay.
I was just out of high school. I graduated from Tulsa High School, Central High School, when they were that was the only high school I left there,
of course.
Year that they had the racetrack, Tulsa, you know.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And the race ride has become more and more wild and wicked ever since that time. I was all through the whole thing.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Well, that didn't have much to do with Bristow, but tell me what you do know about it. I've heard some of those conflicting stories.
The latest story I've heard was that there was 39 people killed in the Tulsa race ride. And I can almost guarantee that there was only three.
Is that right?
Yeah, there was only three. And I was all over the territory, all over the thing, because Paul Dan Caskey, whose father was the Palace Clothers in Tulsa, he owned the Palace Clothers down at 5th and Main.
Yeah.
And Paul lived very close to me, and he came down in his car and took down to the police station. We caught up by the police station and parked. And then that time we parked and walked over to the police station, there was an officer came out and handed each one of us a shotgun, told us to go shoot a nigger. And I said, hell, I'm not going to shoot anybody. But he said, well, take that anyway. We said, well, what do you want us to do? He said, all right, you go over on Greenwood, and there'll be some officers over there, the people in charge, and they'll tell you what to do. And so they put us searching houses for people who were still around. You know, most of them had already fled. But there was quite a few people still in these houses. They just holed up. So we were searching every house. We had four men that searched each house. And two of us would go into the house. Each time, one would cover the other one with a shotgun while the first man walked in. And if there were more than one room we had to enter, the man that walked in the front door, he'd hold his gun on the behind the back up the other fellow, and he'd go into the next room. We just stair-stepped each other into the complete house.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, we'd find somebody, and of course, they were scared, terrified. But we'd take them out in the street, and just tell them to stand there, and somebody'd take them along. So we'd accumulate quite a few, and we'd take them down and put them in a congregation point. At one time, we had about 1,000 congregated down there on Standpipe Hill, and there was four of us that marched 1,000 down. Well, an officer told us we'd been taking them what do they call the old convention hall? They called it the Old Lady of Brady Street.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we had already decorated this place for our graduation. But by the time it was time for our graduation, they had about 6,000 blacks in there for protective custody. They were searching all of them out on the front porch. There must have been a pile of razors and pocket knives and just different kind of knives and weapons of that sort. We took them all away from them before we let them inside the building. And must have had a pile there. It must have been 15 or 20 feet across. It must have been a foot deep in the middle.
So
a tremendous amount of it. But they put them in there until that completely filled. And then they put the surplus over what that building would hold convention hall. And they took him down to McNulty Park, which was then the baseball field and 11th Street. And we took the two groups in there for about, oh, anywhere from 500 or 600 feet, maybe 1,000. We just put them inside because these people were afraid somebody would shoot them. Now, this early this morning, I saw one black that had been shot, and they told us that there was another that had been wounded that didn't get killed. When they had turned these baggage trucks down, people, they had turned them over and using them for barricades. And there was one body down there in the railroad yard. And then we saw one other body. And then I heard of another one who had been killed. And I believe that I'm accurate in saying that three was all that was killed in that Andrew race. The last newspaper article I saw sometime around 3 or 4 or 5 months ago claimed then that there was 39 killed, and I'm sure that highly exaggerated. I don't think that's true at all.
In fact, there were stories, I guess, about the machine guns being set up and bodies being loaded in the boxcars and
some of the wildest tales that you ever heard in your life. And the tales have gotten wilder and bigger ever since this happening.
Yeah.
And it's now, the last report I read in the paper said 39 killed. And I'm certain that inherent. I didn't know it.
And you say, but Paul Jankowski was with you.
Yeah.
We were
some of this
together all day.
Good.
And we walked.
After we got over into Greenwood, we parked the car over there and just walked around and we searched
these houses for, oh, I guess about 5 or 6 hours. And then we started transporting them down to get them in protective custody so that we could be heard.
Well,
that might be an interesting story.
Yes,
Bristol, I've never seen Bristol.
But I have read the thesis on the race riot, or rather, I know there is one, and I've heard about it all these years.
Well, the way it started, they had taken some a black boy in custody. He tried to assault an elevator girl in one of the buildings there long late at night. And they took him down to jail and put him in jail. And there was a group of other black little toughs, I think they were. They came down there and they were going to release him. And they called in all the officers that were not on duty and just made a ring around the courthouse. And they were having a little hassle there on the steps, and one of the blacks grabbed for one of these officers' guns, and when he did, the gun went off, and there was quite a crowd had gathered, and it shot one of the bystanders across the street, shot her in the thigh, and of course she started raising a lot of fuss about that, hollering, screaming. So they called an ambulance for her, of course, and then all these blacks run. They ran down Main Street. They forget off Main Street, right? They all were in the jail at that time, what? They all ran down, and they all gathered again down at the depot, and that's where the main little battle started. But near that, I could tell, one and possibly two were all that were killed there. And then during the rest of the riot, there was another one killed, and he ran. Some guys, and they shot him.
Getting back to Bristol, then,
yeah.
How did you
fall down to pick
Bristol? Was it just because the agency was available, or was there some?
No, actually, an aunt of mine. Well, I got to talk. My aunt's husband, Mr. E.M. Vanderslice, was a Ford dealer in Tulsa, the only Ford dealer they had at that time. He also owned Ford agencies in Claremore and Pawhuska and Claremore and I believe another one or two. At that time, you could have them all around it. And he also had the Ford tractor agency for this area. And so he got killed in an accident in a freight yard. He got caught between two freight railway cars. Switching engines. Bumped two cars together and caught him, killed him.
Well, My dad was her closest relation. And so he was superintendent of the school at Harrisonville, Missouri. And that summer, I hadn't graduated. I had just finished with junior class. But I came to Tulsa and went to Tulsa Central after for my 1921 year and graduated Tulsa Central High School that spring. But then, from then, we went to Claremore and operated the Claremore place for a couple of years. And then we came back to Tulsa and we operated a motor rebuilding plant there. Dad and I together. And about that time, this agency became available here in Bristow. And so my dad and I bought the partnership, both equal partners, when we bought this agency here in 1923. We bought it the first day of September and took it over on the first day of October. My dad was down here all that time, but he didn't actually take possession until the first day of October, 1923.
Was the oil boom still on in Bristow that way?
The oil boom was pretty well over by that time. However, most of the oil field work was still being carried on with teams. And they had these big groups of people who were casing cutters. They'd like that kind of work. And they had a lot of casing cutters here.
All right.
I can't remember his name right offhand. This little sudden, you know, to remember.
Sure.
But he was quite a well-known that fella. And there was a fella here named Williams. It was a casing puller. And he was also a wrestler. And they had professional wrestling in Bristow at the time. And most of the wrestling was tagged on at a building, which is now the J&J Cafe down on Shop Main. And then they also had some of their wrestling matches in the theaters. The old Walmart Theater is where the Comenda State is now located. And at that time, they were all silent movies.
I don't know for sure when
which movie started.
I've heard of the Walmart. I've heard of the Princess. Star.
And I don't know which one.
They were all here. As I remember, I believe they were all here. Time that I was there. But, and then the Walmart Theater had vaudeville
quite a bit of
the time. And they had regular vaudeville shows came in here. And then they had these
touring shows.
See, you were still young enough.
Were you married by then?
No.
I was okay.
You were young enough and single. What did a
single young man
do in Bristow for entertainment?
About the only entertainment there was. In the summertime, of course, we had the old Poles Park, which had a swimming pool. And that was the only swimming pool around here, with the exception of
going to the creek or something like that. But also,
we made
friends with
Louis Meyer's dad. Over at Sepulpa, and he had that
big home and a big pond there we went swimming in.
He had bath out and all the stuff. So we'd get dates and go over there and go swimming over there.
But Toad
Park had a little swimming pool about 10 feet wide
and probably
25 feet long. And they had a little bathhouse there, and that's all there was there. Mm-hmm.
But they also had camping
facilities around the area,
and that's
where the Elks Club is located now.
Oh, okay.
That's the same location
as an old fellow's fire.
Yeah. And see what else might be. Oh, yes.
One of these,
if I can remember the name of it, on East 6th Street, just east of the alley from Main Street, was an old hotel, and then don't remember the name of it, but I'm sure that a lot of people remember the name of that hotel.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe Orr,
Laurel,
Yeah, Laurel, that's it. The Laurel Hotel. Thank you for reminding. It was the old Laurel Hotel. And it was on that corner, which is vacant at the present time. And it was a two-story hotel. And it was more, I think, more of a honky-tonk for gals and all. They were available there at all times. And then the rooming houses upstairs, up and down Main Street, were also had girls available in nearly all of them, because during the boom, these were off-field workers, and they drank and take women. And they had the facilities to take care of.
Right.
Yeah, I remember. What about, I guess it was jumping ahead a little bit, but,
what effect did the Depression
have on us? As far as we were concerned, we never did notice it came off. The, foot business fell off, and everybody kind of tight.
Their belts and all that sort of thing.
But actually, most of my living was
somewhat of a primitive
type, and the Depression didn't hurt the job.
It was too late.
Of course, there was a lot of people now that had no income at all.
Yeah. And we had to, what they call their soup lines, that were merchants around town.
There was no federal
assistance or anything at that time. But the, I don't think there was any federal assistance
anyway.
The merchants and people who had a little money donated money to provide bread and soup, and that's about all they got it
to the places.
But they had these places where they could use an empty store building, and they'd make great big tubs full of soup and
serve bread and
soup. That's about all, but that
was enough to
keep them alive. Backing up a little,
were you here when the radio station was open? Oh, yeah. Yes, Ed Rollstone, he ate Mel Rollstone, what's his name?
And previous to him, though,
the Lanos had a radio station
right down here in the old Chevrolet building.
They had
up here on the second floor of the
building right down
here.
They had one first.
Yes, they had one first, a small one. And I don't know whether Ed was financially involved in that one. I rather think not. But it was in the second floor of the three-story building right here at Mercer's.
Yeah, that's the first time I've heard of that, I think.
One of them, Delano's at Merritt.
See, what was the other Delano boy's name?
Or,
do you remember?
Matt Delano was one of them.
Merritt's here. And then also back in about that same, somewhere right along in there, we had a big glass plant move into Bristow, and they had a glass plant right over here, about the location where the city water well is over there on 12th Street. And they produced their bottles, I think.
That's the only thing they built over there.
Getting one question about the radio that you may not
know, I've been told.
They started a radio station here.
It was KFRU.
Correct. And somebody told me that
KFRU was sold to, they thought, Columbia, Missouri.
It was sold
and then KBO was started.
They sold
the original KFRU equipment
to the college
in Columbia, Missouri.
And then KBO
was started.
It was KBO right here in Bristol. Yeah, I think so.
And then they sold it out. Ed Rollstone sold it to people in Tulsa.
Yeah,
I don't know who bought it. But at the time we had it here, some of the main entertainment was Jimmy Wilson and his Catfish Band, and they broadcast as if they were on the
Catfish Band. What was the deal?
The first station
you're talking about started by Delano taking over by Rollstone, or had it gone out of business?
No, he just quit.
I think. However, I think it's Ed Rollstone,
I think, bought some of the equipment that the Delanos had down there.
I see.
And here's down there on the second floor of the Delano Hotel.
Oh, is there anybody around you think would know the details of that first station still? That's the first I've heard of it.
Already?
Mm-hmm.
I had the first portable radio in this town.
Did you?
In an automobile.
After.
You, at that time, all of the receivers were these high-priced, expensive Schomburg Carsons, or get the name of the other one. But they were very complicated. Fair had about a dozen dials on them,
and you got more static than you got sound. And they were tremendously difficult to operate. Almost an engineer just to operate. Why the hell was that?
We had the big arm set up on top.
Yeah. And, but all of us kids found out that that
you could make a crystal set.
And I don't know whether you ever saw a crystal set.
Oh, yes, I made one once.
That you used a little chunk of coal. That's what we used anyway. And we had a tickler on it and a coil, yeah, which we could
tune to the frequency of the station.
And we'd set
that ticker on the top of the car.
And had a headset that we could listen to the radio from them.
So I got the idea of a young penguin
at the time. So I had a port hoop, and I took
copper
screen wire and put it underneath my headlining in the top of this coupe.
And then I
took this
ticker and put it on this little crystal deal. And
it
drops the light
for it so it wouldn't work away from that. But you couldn't drive. You couldn't drive and use the radio at the same time. But
I'd take my girlfriend out in the country, and we would
fly. No, I couldn't go over careful mountain town because I But I had a hole drilled in my floorboard, and I could jam this grounding rod into the dirt through this hole in the floorboard. And I had two sets of earphones. And you and your dad could both sit there and listen to the radio. However, it was always a little difficult to make love with a pair of the headphones on. But I had a monopoly on all the best dates in town for a while until these other guys caught up and started building themselves. After they did that, well, of course, all the kids on hand built them up on these sets like mine.
Yep.
Yeah. But we'd,
park was out in the city park.
We got real good reception, and also it was an isolated place that was before the lake was built out there. And it was all woods in there. And we'd go out there and park in these woods down there and listen to our radio.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. What effect, was any particular effect of World War II on Bristow, other than just what you'd expect?
Well, they made a great deal more ceremony out of the war than we have in any subsequent time. At that time, whenever a group of boys were going to the army, they always had the band out, and they gave them a big send-off. And they always transported them on the train, nearly always.
And everybody in town would be at the railroad
station. Maybe we'd have 20 or 25 young fellas going. But everybody would gather down at the railroad station and send these off with a big band playing and everybody here, waving flags. All that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it was quite a ceremony. And then the troop trains came here, through here all the time. After they were inducted, they were
many people all over the country that were being transported down here to Port Hill for training. So we had many troop trains at the
business life of
Bristow. It went through its cotton days before you came, really. And
at the time I came here, I believe there were 7 or 8 cotton gins in operation. The biggest one, the two biggest ones, were Kelly's. That's Albert Sr. And he, one of them was down on South Main, right there at the railroad track. And the other one was down here on East 7th Street. The building is now destroyed there.
And then, of course, the oil business came in.
And after the oil business is already pretty well established. I think our main oil boom in Bristow was somewhere around 1921, 22.
And then
somewhere along in the
late 30s, or early 30s, somewhere in there, there was a brief business. Yeah, oil cleaning. Instituted that as a community project.
Established the peanut mill, which is still the building, it's still there, part of the building, down there between 2nd and 3rd Street on South Main. And he bought a
10 or 20 peanut packing
machines that the boys could come in and borrow and harvest their peanut crops.
And Riley was
very beneficial in promoting this peanut business, and it did give us a shot in the arm. Because it was one of the biggest money crops that we had up until that time. The cattle business, of course, was pretty good, but primarily we were a row cropping community at that during those years. They raised corn and cotton, and of course cotton was our primary.
And as I remember, we had
7 cotton. But the
peanut business
turned out to be a real good thing until they promoted such a degree all over the Southwest that they got a surplus of peanuts. And they started in allotting
how many
acres you could plant in peanuts. Well, that soon, they just kept cutting their allotments down to such a point that it wasn't very long. So
maybe that had
been planting 2 acres and they'd get down to maybe a third of an acre or something like that, and they wouldn't fool with them on the basis they could produce. So the peanut business died out when the allotments got so bad. That's true.
When did they start to promote the thing of other types of industries kind of here today? I mean, is that
something fairly recent, or has that been going on?
I don't remember the date, but really the first thing here I can remember that really of great magnitude was the garment factory out here, and I don't remember exactly what year that was. But the Chamber of Commerce pulled a shenanigan to build that thing.
It was as illegal, I think,
as anything could possibly have been.
But what they did, they bought some
parking lots down here,
close to Main Street, and then sold them to the city for a very inflated price, I remember, to raise the money to build this plant over there.
Well, has there been, or have there been obstacles, which you're aware of,
the Gulf of Bristow? I mean,
for example, there have been problems.
Housing, problems of land to build houses on, the Gulf of the city in terms of its size.
And R.L. Jones, he lives right out there in town out here, were principal landowners around here. R.L. nearly all the land west
around
the city park and all out through there. And Albert Kelly and R.L. Jones had the growth pretty well shut off on the north. And they wouldn't sell any land to anybody. So the growth had to be constrained to, it was constrained to just south and east pretty well. But they were both real civic minded in a way, except they wouldn't sell their land.
Yeah.
All they wanted to do was buy more. All they wanted was what joined them. That's all
right. And out there,
nearly all this paving around Bristow was put in after I came here. Main Street, however, was paved when I came here, as I remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, have there been any particular events that you either
witnessed or
heard about that maybe not everybody knows about that are worth recording, preserving? You weren't involved in any of the bank robberies, or?
Well, I was here when they happened, and I was here when two of the banks went broke.
The
First National
went broke two days.
And I can't remember the dates of that. But the first one that went broke was the First State Bank over on the corner where Pacific Finance is over there, the corner of 7th and Main on the east southeast corner. And that was a bank in there. And it went broke, but it so happened we owed them more than we had in it. So we got all of our money back by just paying off the balance of our note. And then when the Groom Bank went broke,
that First National
Bank, and that's the northwest corner of
Santa Fe, Maine.
That was run by the Groom Brothers. And it was my understanding that they lost the bank money speculating in Florida real estate.
I don't think they profited
from it, but they broke the bank during it.
And
Mr. Phelan was around here then. He was a big operator in Florida real estate.
He'd made a lot of money, but he didn't cash in money.
Got caught
in the Depression when bottom fell out of Florida real estate.
He lost all his fortune pretty well in there. Yeah.
Kid
Purdy, I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yes,
kind of. He lives in his house right down there. Yeah, right there on 10th Street. Clad, everybody called him Clad Purdy. He ran a insurance place here. And he was quite influential in town for a long time. Paul Chris was related, Paul Chris in some way was related, I think it was Ed's wife, brother, possibly.
And he was an excellent organist
and piano player. And he was one of the principal entertainers
on KFRU when he got started. He did a lot of entertaining on KFRU for those musical budget. And then, of course, they just used anything there. They just come up
and have kids come up and sing, and they'd have them.
You know, there are people
who will tell me that that was the first radio station in the United States, and then there are others who say it was the first one in Oklahoma, and I don't know for a fact about even that.
I don't think it was even the first in Oklahoma, because there were some others, I think, operating it.
But it was one of the
main ones. There were very few at that time. It was a new enterprise altogether. Ed Rostone was wealthy from Auburn. And he was the one that put it in and promoted it.
Speaking of newspapers, I am supposed to talk to Mr. Cook. Well, what's the story? I've heard that Cook and Nichols had quite a fight going over something. I don't know what.
The main deal over that was that Cook put in a competitive newspaper. And Nichols tried to run him out of town.
I see.
But I.L. survived him. And finally bought his old newspaper after he died.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Al Cook still lives here.
Yeah. All right. And then the present owner bought it from Cook.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, he sold it to Ed Mack.
All right.
But Al Cook is still here in town, and I'm sure here with his and his wife, too. They both were in the newspaper business. And I feel like that either one of them would be invaluable sources of a lot of. Not quite as early as maybe I'm familiar with, but they'd have probably a more comprehensive idea of a lot of these things than I would, because that was their business, keeping track of news. Competitors were not friendly in any respect.
When was that, in the 30s?
Back before then, before the 30s, I believe. I'm not very good on data and things like that.
Well, you think it was primarily a business rivalry. It wasn't anything.
Nothing personal, because they didn't even know
each other.
They
weren't Democrats against the Republicans or something like that.
They were all Democrats. There's never been any preponderance of anybody but Democrats in this county.
What about politics? You ever get involved in politics in Bristow?
No, not particularly. I ran for mayor one time, and they beat me pale. But I was very unhappy with a lot of things that were going on, and I thought that I could put the city of Bristow on a business basis rather on a political basis, but they didn't agree with me, so...
Well, as politics, as far as city elections are concerned, has it been a partisan thing or just a individual thing?
I think probably more of it is between Democrats.
Yeah.
As far as the Republican minority, they never were able to do much. But we've had a few Republican mayors. I believe O.G. Ross was a Republican mayor. And his daughter, Mrs. Curtis Turner, lives here now. And they're living in the old O.G. Ross home.
I believe there have been a few Republican county commissioners.
Yes, that's right. That's true. But I think this community around here has largely been in favor of the individual, and I don't think it made that much difference between a Republican and a Democrat. We never did, I didn't feel like, adhere to party lines at
all. City elections were pretty nonpartisan.
I think so. Yes, I believe so. Most of our people that get elected things are well-known people that have been around here for quite a while, and they vote for them on their personality and not their politics.
Now, we started talking about the Tulsa race riot. How have race relations been in Bristow?
Race relations in Bristow have never been strained in any manner. My wife was teaching school here when the integration came to her school, and there's never been an incident of any consequence at all as far as the integration of the race at all. Now, of course, they did have a few little difficulties with maybe blacks. I think it had the same number with the whites. But the black schools over here, way over here on West Fair, Kansas,
Yeah, I guess here's our west end. And it's now at private records over there. They tore down most of the building. But Haskell Thompson now lives in the great school building over there and converted into a residence. But they had a big gymnasium over there, and they used to have all their basketball games and everything. And it was a big deal to go to one of the black basketball games. They're enthusiastic. I mean, the readers are.
Well, I understand the high school athletics have been fairly important to a town like Bristow.
Bristow has been fortunate in either having good coaches. I think Hafer, of course, was the forerunner of our better athletic team. C. Hafer, who is still alive, I think. I saw him not over a couple of years ago. And he lives in Edmond at present time. But E.C. Hafer is who our football field is named after. And after he started this football going in a big way, we've had some excellent football teams. In fact, we've won their championship and been in the playoffs year after year, for years in Bristow. Hey, football season is a highlight of Bristow, right?
I've heard that when the games were held in the afternoon, which they may still be for all I know, that they used to close down the businesses and...
For one game in particular, we used to play Sepulpa. And, of course, the Sepulpa game was always a very tense game because of the fact that Sepulpa and Bristow vied with each other to get the county seat. And Sepulpa, we claim, stole it from us, and I don't know how true that is, but we always claim that Sepulpa stole it from Bristow because we were a logical center and we should have been it, but we didn't get it.
Right.
And but it did start a rivalry, which never did cease until we quit playing them. They got so large that we were not in their conference anymore, and we haven't played them for several years now, 7 or 8 years. But football has been a major activity of the high school. They play basketball and track and those other things. We have, by the way, though, had some outstanding track people in this town. We got Jack Carman, who still lives here. He was one of the best hurdlers. He held a hurdle championship for the state of Oklahoma for years. That was before they put them in conference. You just competed against everybody. And then Sammy Allen was another hurdler from this town. And he was much later than Jack Carman, but he was outstanding and held several state championships in hurdles.
Well, I know there are a lot of things that I haven't touched on. Is there something I should have asked you about that
comes to mind that ought to be preserved?
Well, one thing that you might be interested in, when I first came to Bristow, there were very few highways around here except just dirt roads. One of the first highway markings, I believe, was the old Ozark Trail. And all it was a band of green and white paint around a tree or a fence post
with OT
printed on this.
That was the original marking for any highway around Bristow.
At that time, you could get lost half a dozen times going from here to Tulsa because you just went on the section line road.
Yeah.
And, of course, many times you'd get onto a road that was no longer passable with an automobile. At that time, when we first came here, we never thought of driving to Tulsa and trying to transact any business without staying all night and coming back the next day because the roads were so poor that with the transportation that we had and the roads that we had, you'd consume hours just driving to Tulsa.
Yeah. And you went through Sepulpa even then?
Yes, went through Sepulpa. But there were no paving.
The Ozark Trail, huh?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
I've heard of the Ozark Trail, but I had no idea where it was.
Well, I don't know where it started. But it started, I think, somewhere around Oklahoma City and went to Springfield, Missouri. And that, I think, was the first